Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is rule number 6. And the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving and creating in every area of your life. 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. That is 866-254-1579. Outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing your country code, usually 001-760-918-4300. And as always, I'll begin by setting the table for the show today. And rule number 6, some of you may know the reference. It's a story that I first came across in a book by Benjamin Zander and Rosamund Stone Zander called The Art of Possibility. And the story goes like this. Two prime ministers are sitting in a room discussing affairs of state. Suddenly a man bursts in, apoplectic with fury, shouting and stamping and banging his fist on the desk. The resident prime minister admonishes him. Peter, he says, kindly remember rule number 6. Whereupon Peter is instantly restored to complete calm, apologizes, and withdraws. The politicians return to the conversation only to be interrupted yet again 20 minutes later by a hysterical woman gesticulating wildly, her hair flying. Again, the intruder is greeted with the words, Marie, please remember rule number 6. Complete calm descends once more, and she too withdraws with a bow and an apology. When the scene is repeated for a third time, the visiting prime minister addresses his colleague. My dear friend, I've seen many things in my life, but never anything as remarkable as this. Would you be willing to share with me the secret of rule number 6? Very simple, replies the resident prime minister. Rule number 6 is don't take yourself so goddamn seriously. Ah, says his visitor. That is a fine rule. After a moment of pondering, he inquires, and what, may I ask, are the other rules? There aren't any. One of the things that I see again and again, and it's a little bit chicken and egg when you watch it. It's a little bit, did the lightheartedness cause the effectiveness? Or did things going well cause the lightheartedness? But is that when we take the weight off of what we do, when we take the seriousness out of what we do, we tend to do very well, or at least as well as we can. Now, I'm not talking about... I use the analogy sometimes about the difference between being careless, careful, and carefree. So I'm not talking about, yeah, I could care less. I don't care. Who cares? It's just a business meeting. Who cares? It's just this person's well-being. Who cares? It's just a radio show. And I'm not talking about careful. Oh my God, what if something goes wrong? What if I say the wrong thing? What if I do the wrong thing? I'm very important. People need to listen to me. Why aren't they listening to me? I'm talking about carefree. I'm talking about a recognition that it's a great big universe. And while what we are doing may be important, it's important in the way that each wave of the ocean coming to shore is important. It plays a part in the whole, but there's really no individual wave that's more important than any other wave. And when we see that what gets in the way of playing full out is caring too much or not caring at all, it helps us to find this kind of a sweet spot where we can take what we're doing seriously without taking ourselves so seriously, right? We can have a respect for what we're up to without being overly respectful of the way that we are up to it. I had a client once, and we were playing golf, and we'd stopped at the night after the ninth hole, and I remember going out for the tenth hole, and he turned to me, and he was a very serious man, and he turned to me and he said, Michael, do you think I need to be more serious? And I burst out laughing because I assumed he was joking because he was one of the most serious-minded people I'd ever met. And he was horrified because I wasn't taking him seriously. Because he thought that people needed to take him seriously. He needed to take himself seriously in order to have an impact. And what he didn't see is that actually, because his attention was on him, because his attention was on his own image of self-importance, which is another way of saying ego, that's what people got from him. They got somebody who cared a lot about how what people thought of him and how he came across, and not someone who cared a lot about them or what it was that they wanted. And so it's really interesting that when you take yourself lightly, you're actually able to bring much more gravitas to what you do. But when you put all the weight on you and how you're coming across and how people are taking you, well, A, you're kind of a pain to be around. But B, you're also nowhere near your best. Because we do at our best when we're able to be really present. We are at our best when we have more bandwidth instead of less. We are at our best when we're not on our minds. And anyone who's experienced flow in any kind of performance, an athlete, or radio show host, a performer, a business person, and you know that that feeling, a writer, when you're in flow, it's like you're not even there. I mean, you're there, but you're not there. And that's what rule number 6 points to. That's the willingness to take yourself lightly so you can take what you're doing more seriously. And it makes all the difference in the world. So numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S., dial 001-760-918-4300. And let's begin today in Seattle with Maria. Maria, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Oh, hello.
Hello.
I'm calling about a decision that I passed by an opportunity, and it was over a house. And it was almost a year ago, but it has suddenly just come back. And it was a house I actually waited for a row of houses. One of the houses to go on sale for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I actually made an offer, and it almost went through, and I didn't follow through.
Yeah.
And now I kick myself, and you know, it's like the universe. I don't know what it is. I keep thinking about it. I was reading even your book, Space Within, and you made some reference to your wife offering you a cup of tea when you came up from a session, and I thought, oh, well, he has a basement house. This house had a basement.
Mm-hmm.
It's just my brain.
So this is great. I'm part of your self-abuse. That's nice. I like to feel important, contrary to everything I've said up until this point in the show.
But I've really been working on the practicing the principles and understanding that I'm just feeling my thinking. I've obviously and just wrapped up in it. But what's the next step? Because I literally visualize what I could have done with the rooms and my business, and it's not going to happen anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the next step? How do you move past? I know I'm thinking in it. So what do you do next?
Well, see, here's an interesting notion, and here's the dilemma in the way that you've got it set up, right? And I'm not going to leave you in the little. I'm not going to say, well, here's where you're screwed. Anyways, next caller. But the way you've got it set up is, if it feels like something you have to move past, then it is at the forefront of your mind.
Oh yeah.
And essentially, we all have bad habits of thought, right? We have certain habits of thinking that don't really work for us, but we do them because it's just habitual. And we tend to, and I heard somebody talking about this recently, we tend to identify ourselves with our worst habits of thought. Oh, I'm a worrier. You know, oh, I'm an addict. Oh, I'm an angry person. And what we mean is, I habitually think angry thoughts. I habitually think thoughts that have a compulsive feeling to them. I habitually think thoughts that are anxious and insecure. Or in your case, I habitually think thoughts that that have a feeling of loss or missing out or regret.
Hindsight. I have the gift of hindsight.
Yeah, you have the gift of partial hindsight, right? So you can see the bit of the movie where it all works out great and there's no rats in the basement and there's no termites in the banisters and there's no property tax and there's no repairs and there's no horrible neighbors and there's like, you know what I mean?
I do. I hear what you're saying. And yet, I do see what you're saying. But yet, I've thought about that house for 20 years, and I somehow had it. I mean, I know the house so well, and it was something that was going to be. I could fix it up and recreate it myself. And I keep kicking myself for that. It's like, what was I thinking at that moment? Why didn't I? And the perception.
Well,
then
so
was
here's
very
it.
Different.
Let me back it up a bit, Maria. Do you control your thinking?
I don't try to control it.
Well, it's not even whether you try to. It's like, is it within your power? If you know, in other words, could you think exactly what you want to think 24/7?
I can catch myself in the thought.
Okay, see, the fact that you're even considering that the answer to that might be yes tells me a lot.
Okay.
So, I mean, I've had the opportunity to meet some yogis, you know, people who have devoted their life to developing their mental powers of concentration. And they can concentrate on one thing for hours. But these are people who've devoted their whole life and they can still only do hours of single-minded focus. We're just not designed to control our thinking. You know, we can do it for a minute. If we train, we can do it for a couple hours. But nobody is in control of what comes into their head 24/7. In fact, most of us aren't in control of what comes into our head at all.
Well, and that's what's puzzling to me because it feels almost intrusive because when I didn't buy the house, I felt fine for almost, 8, 9 months now. Mm-hmm. And then it has come back with like a wave as it's come back. And then I realized what I didn't see.
So why do you think in this instance, and I'm not expecting you to know the answer, but it might be an interesting thing to ask. Why do you think in this instance, it doesn't just feel like you've learned something?
Probably about my concept of time. Because I've been waiting and sitting on this for 20 years. And I'm in the neighborhood. I live in another home up the hill. And I wish I had bought one of those homes 20 years ago when I bought my house. And then it came on the market. And there were circumstances where I...
Well, hang on. I don't want you... In a way, Maria, I'm going to be potentially rude and not have you into the story. Because the whole problem is you've got this story down pat.
Right. I know. Yeah.
Right. So there's no room for new thought. Because you keep telling the same story, and so there's no room for a new version to appear. Now, I don't know what it is. I'm not trying to tell you, no, don't think of it like that. Think of it like this.
Right.
I'm just saying, look, the physics of bandwidth, right? If we take the idea that I kind of said at the beginning that, you know, the more bandwidth we have, the better we do. That, you know, the more space we have, the more of a open connection to mind we have. Mm-hmm. The more creative and insightful we're going to be, then filling up the bandwidth, it's like playing the same YouTube kitten video again and again and again and again on every device in the home and wondering why, you know, somebody else is trying to watch Netflix and it's really slow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, all that you can do, that I know to do, is not deliberately keep pressing play on the kitten video. And then a new video will come up, like whatever's next in the queue. But to try and do anything about the kitten video. It's just the kitten video.
Okay.
And so from the point of view of seeing, okay, we live in the experience of thought in the moment. And fresh thought is always available. But in order to get the fresh thought, I kind of need to open up at least a moment's pause in the old thought.
Right.
And if I know that's my intention, then it will happen, because to a certain extent, not 100% control extent, but to a certain extent, thought follows intention. Right. I will get ideas about I'll see things in when I'm looking. So if I'm looking for fresh thought, if I'm looking to what I haven't yet thought, if I'm looking for the quiet of mind around the noise of my kitten video, then I'll start to get more of that.
Right.
And that's the space where new thought comes. So, you know, it sounds, you know, the analogy I've found myself using in the last couple of weeks is the La Brea Tar Pits. Have you ever been down to the La Brea Tar Pits here in
LA?
No. So the La Brea Tar Pits are kind of cool, because basically they're still finding fossils in there, and they're these naturally occurring tar pits that are, I can't remember, but like 10,000 years old. And essentially what the reason animals got stuck in them is they'd get like one rhinoceros hoof in the tar pit. And then they couldn't pull it out, so they'd stick another hoof to try and get leverage to pull that first one out. And then both of them would be stuck, so they'd bring in the rest of them, and eventually they'd just fall in the pit and drown. And trying to fix thinking that's already there is like trying to get more into the tar pit to get out of the tar pit. It doesn't work that way. Looking to dry land, looking to solid ground, looking to the space around the thinking, looking to the unknown, that's when we eventually wake up and realize we're not in the tar pit.
Yeah, I just got it right there. I just caught it.
Great. Tell me, put it into your words.
Well, rather than continuing to basically fix my vision and my focus in the tar pit, shift my little viewer or my little lens out of the tar pit to the space around it for the other options, basically other options that I don't even know of at this point. But and it's almost a mechanical move, and I can see what you're saying. But don't keep looking at the kitty video. Look.
Yeah, it is a mechanical move, but it's a mechanical move based on understanding how it works.
Right, and I do, and I sense the relief that happens when I don't look into the tar pit anymore. I can sense it, and it's just staying out and keep looking up. And then, you know, I'm really dissecting your book on then going into the next level of actually savoring the actual sensations I have, not just observing what I'm doing, but being with it. And I'm trying to practice this thing that you're saying, the principles. But it's been it's just interesting how my mind keeps going to that area. That's the
puppet. Well, and I think part of what you're up against is you can't really practice gravity. You can see it in more and more places. You can see its effects in more and more situations. And that's useful. But because you don't do gravity, there's nothing to practice. So, you know, the way I say it is, you know, there's nothing to do, but there's something to see.
Right.
But seeing just means looking.
Right.
And you've just seen where to look.
Right. And stop the doing. Stop trying to keep really, in a sense, thinking when I think I'm not thinking.
Yeah, it's insidious, because you know that's why the tar pits is a good analogy, because it's like, okay, so I'm trying to not think about not thinking about thinking about not thinking.
Right.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. Oh, are you open to me sharing something about the foreword to your book, The Space Within, that I thought was...
Yeah, please do. I'll decide whether to blame or thank Robert Holden after.
Well, that's the funniest part. I was reading the foreword, and I thought it was the most brilliant foreword I had ever seen, because the way I started reading it was that you showed up to have dinner with four people, obviously another couple, but the other couple didn't show up. And so you were left with you and you, not somebody else. And I didn't, as it was later on, I realized it was Robert Holden who was writing that intro.
Oh, I see.
It was fascinating that you were spending time with you.
Oh, funny.
And anyway, I probably sound like the craziest person on the radio right now, but anyway, I just thought...
Hey, look, better you than me. I've got to be back next week.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Maria.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You know, it's putting the Robert Holden thing aside for a minute. One of the things that is so interesting about our psychology is that we do so much better when we don't try to get into it. You know, which is counter to what we're taught. It's like we're all suffering from psychology, and there's this sense, well, the best way out is through. But you know what? That's actually not true, because we have a level of presence beyond our psychology. Our psychology is how we've learned to think. It's our habits of thought. We call that our psychology. But you are also an ever-present possibility for new thought. You are the infinite potential of the entire universe. And it's just a case of where you put your attention. And when your attention is in the habitual thought, you'll see it. It's there. It's not there. But when your attention is to the source, well, then new things come. You know, it's like if I'm looking downstream, I see what's already past. If I'm looking upstream, I see what is yet to come. Well, it's the same with the mind. If I look to my psychology and the patterns and the habits and the addictions and the compulsions and the ruminations, well, that's what's already come through my mind. But if I can look inside, if I can look upstream, if I can look to the not yet created, well, then I get to be surprised and delighted by what comes. And I don't have to free myself from what's already downstream, because it's already downstream. It's already past. So I was thinking of, in our rule number six, keeping with the rule number six theme, you know, don't take yourself so goddamn seriously. There was a British actor named Alistair Sim, and he's probably most well known for Christmas Carol. So he was one of the very first talkie movies of A Christmas Carol. I think it was 1937, and he played Scrooge. And I remember reading, you know, when I was an actor, I used to love reading other actor biographies and autobiographies. And I remember reading his and him talking about the big turning point in his career. And he said for a long time, he was very tentative as an actor. He wasn't very dynamic. And it was because he was afraid people would think he was a fool. You know, they think he's a total goofball. And he said, one day I realized that I am a fool. And then it was fine. And I think there's something to that. Like when we're scared that people will think we're silly, or people will think we're not completely up to scratch, or people will think we make stupid mistakes from time to time. Well, we probably do. And then we don't have to worry about it. There's a great book called Getting Naked. Not a great book for the reason you think. It's a business book by Patrick Lencioni. And it's essentially a story, a teaching story about a business consultant who learns about the power of vulnerability in business. And in the foreword to the book, or the introduction, Lencioni talks about how people, you know, have sometimes said to him, well, look, I can't be vulnerable at work. If I let them know that I don't know what I'm doing and that I'm making all these mistakes, they're going to fire me. And he says, well, yeah, but they're going to fire you for your incompetence, not your vulnerability. They're not going to fire you for not pretending to be something you're not. They're going to fire you if they fire you because you're not up for the job. If you're up for the job, the fact that you're also human is not a problem. It's an asset. If you're up for the job, the fact that you're just as smart when you're smart and dumb when you're dumb and skilled when you're skilled and messy when you're messy as anybody else is what lets me believe you. It's what gives you credibility. There's a book by Sheldon Kopp in the 1970s called If You Meet the Buddha on the Road, Kill Him. And the essential message of the book was beware the man who casts no shadow. Beware anything outside you that looks too good to be true. And particularly the person who doesn't seem to have any problems. Because either they're lying to you, or they're lying to themselves, or both. Because the human condition is made of thought, right? We're all living in thought, and thought is variable, which means our states of mind are going to come and go, our clarity of mind is going to come and go, our bandwidth is going to come and go. Sometimes we're going to do really great, and sometimes we're not. Sometimes we're going to deliver on what we say, and sometimes we're not. Sometimes we're going to be great to be around, and sometimes we're not. That's just what it is to be a human. That can't be a problem, because if that's a problem, then that's the same problem we all have. But if all that can be true, if I can be as brilliant and stupid, as skilled and unskilled, as on my game and off my game in any given moment as any other human being, and still do the job, well, now you really do have the best of both worlds. Now you've got the job done, and you've got a real human being that you can talk to and connect with doing it. And you're not having to wade through layers of ego in order to get to the results you want to create. Numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the U.S. and Canada, outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. I want to tell you a little bit about stuff we've got coming up. So I'm not allowed to give you an email address, a URL, a web address for this yet, but Saturday, 2 days from now, if you're listening live, Hay House is going to be launching a new free video course that I created for them called Do Nothing, Change Everything. And it's 4 videos. And in each video, I share another aspect of the principles and that I talk about on the show each week and in my books. And in the first video, I talk specifically about insight. And where insight comes from, new thought, fresh ideas, breakthrough ideas, and how all change is preceded by insight. Insight, in fact, is the vehicle of change. And when you understand that's where change comes from, you start to see what contributes to insight and what limits it. And that's the first video in the series. Second video in the series is about relationships and sort of what it is that makes for great relationships and what it is that gets in the way. And I share one of my favorite listening exercises inside that video. And then in the third video, we talk about breaking habits and, you know, what's involved. How do you change habits without willpower? How do habits change, in fact, without you doing anything particular in order to change them? And then in the fourth video, I talk about the nature of effortless change. And it's a preview for a series that we've got coming up that we filmed live in front of a studio audience called The Path of Effortless Change. So if you look out for that on your Hay House emails, you probably will get a little bombarded, if I'm being honest, with emails from them about Do Nothing, Change Everything, the free video course. But also if you go to my website, if you go to michaelneal.org, as soon as we're allowed to, we'll put up a link so that you can sign up and get the free video course and get started. Other things we've got coming up. We've got a Writer's Weekend coming up at the end of April. This is not the same as the Hay House Writers Workshop, which is also brilliant, and I've spoken at those, and they've got one coming up in Vegas in early April. The end of April, Steve Chandler and I, for those of you who know Steve Chandler's work, he's written over 30 now, books in sort of the coaching and self-help and addiction fields. And he's one of my favorite people to work with, and he's got the driest sense of humor. I think, what did they say? Somebody said he's like a crazy, the crazy love child of Tony Robbins and George Carlin or something like that. But Steve and I will be doing a writer's weekend here in LA or online. You can find out about that again at michaelneal.org. And then if you're in London, the other thing that I've got coming up, one in London, one in LA, is a small group called Infinite Potential, Infinite Possibilities. And that's where I do coaching with you over 3 days in a small group. And we announced the first London group back in February, and it sold out within a week. And so we've now added a set of dates for London in May, and we're down to only 3 spaces left. So if you're interested in that, go to last one, michaelneal.org/infinite, and you can find out more about that. Let's go to Chicago. And let's speak to Madeline. Is it Madeline or Madeline?
Madeline, how are
Madeline,
you?
Madeline, welcome. I am well. What's on your mind? What should we talk about today?
You know, your show is always at a time that I can't listen. It's the first time that I've been able to listen straight through. And that first caller reminds me of me, because I'm stuck in my thoughts. But here's the funny thing. I'm stuck in my thoughts, and the very thought that I'm stuck on, I have to be focused on, but yet I'm not focused. So here's the thing. To go to my next level of business, I have to take an exam.
Okay.
And I'd rather walk on hot coals.
Well, it's fun walking on hot coals. I can understand. Cool moss, cool moss, cool moss, cool moss.
It's so deep-seated within me. It's so crazy. I say I'm really bad with exams, but I haven't failed an exam, and maybe this is the first time I'm going to fail an exam, and I'm not a young person anymore, and all these crazy, insane scenarios are going in my head, and I'm like, what is wrong with me? I need to do it's not like I have the luxury of waiting to do this. I have to do it.
Well, okay. There's so many things in there I could quibble with, but I won't. So when's the exam?
You're good at that.
I know. When's the exam?
Whenever I want to. But well, I want it now because the season is upon me. I'm in real estate.
Okay, so
the
basically
season is upon me.
Do you hear what you've done to yourself? I've got to do it now.
Myself.
I've got to do it now, but I can do it anytime. Right, that's what you just explained to me.
That's the truth, though. I've got to do it now. But the reality is I can take it any time, but I don't want to because of the season, because I'm losing out on referrals that are coming my way.
So do you know my intense disrespect for the word because? Can I tell you about it?
Oh, absolutely. No,
and in fact, it's not for the word because, it's just for everything that comes after the word. See, what I've found in 28 years of coaching people is that how much somebody actually wants is inspired by twinkly about something is inversely proportional to the number of reasons they have for wanting it. So if somebody says, yeah, I want to take the exam, why? I don't know. I tend to believe them. And when they say, I want to take the exam, and I go, why? And they go, well, because this and 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 this. What I tend to hear, and I'm not saying this is a blanket rule, okay? So you can tell me to to back off and we'll start again from somewhere else. But what I tend to hear is, yeah, I don't really want to, but I really think I should. And so I'm trying to compel myself to do it by piling up reasons so that no reasonable person could say no.
Okay, well, that's a double, that takes a dual answer.
Great. No, give me both.
So, do I want to take the exam? No, I don't ever want to take the exam. I'd rather swallow poison. Do I have to take it? Yes, because, and here's my because, I absolutely love what I'm doing. I'm very good at what I do. I love what I do. I want to continue what I do, but I want to go to the next level. In order to do that, I must do something that I absolutely am scared to death.
Hang on. So let me ask you a question. Is it that you don't want to do it, or is it that you're scared to death of doing it?
I'm scared to death.
See, that's completely different. That's good news, by the way. If that's true, you want to do it, but you're scared to death of doing it, we might be able to knock that off in the next 3 minutes.
Okay, please.
Let me make the distinction really clear. If you don't want to do it, you're not gonna. Like, you can beat yourself up as much as you want, and it's not gonna happen because you basically don't want to. But if you really do want to, you just don't. You're terrified.
Yes.
Well, see, that's different. So, because terror is made of thought.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And anything made of thought is temporary. It's transient. It comes and it goes. It's shimmery, not solid. And it's, you know, there's a lot of famous quotes that point to this. Eleanor Roosevelt said, "Do the thing you fear and the death of fear is certain." Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "Do the thing and you will have the power, not find the power and then you can do the thing."
Here's the funny thing. My life, all my life, I've always jumped through the hoops, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Always running through the fear and getting it and doing it and reaching and keep going. But now it's this stupid test that if I can concentrate without making myself insane, I can do this in 2 weeks or even in 1 week if I just concentrate. But I'm so...
Let me just check. Is this one of those tests that if you fail it, they remove your ovaries?
It doesn't matter at this point.
Well, okay.
But, no, you're right. Okay. No, I mean, of course, yeah.
Okay. So I'm not saying you got to do it this way, Madeline, but let's just play a game. Okay?
Okay.
If I gave you the homework assignment to fail the test in 2 weeks, just so that you kind of have the experience of taking it, could you do that? Could you fail in 2 weeks for me?
No, that's my problem. I'm more afraid of failing than taking it.
Well, right, but that wasn't the question. I get you're scared.
Okay.
But you know,
are you capable
of failing the test in 2 weeks?
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
And?
Well, here's the thing. You can take the test in 2 weeks. Now, I teach a course. I write a book that's coming out in September called Creating the Impossible. And the number one reason why people won't take on impossible challenges, won't take on that even things that feel impossible to them, is because they think they can predict the future. They think they know what it will feel like to fail. They think they know what it will feel like to succeed. And more than that, they kind of think they know whether or not they'll fail or succeed. But the future is made up. And it's always made up missing one key piece. It's like this sounds like a weird sideways analogy, but I think it's going to tie together. There was a woman in the office where my dad worked when I was growing up who made the best carrot cake on earth. It was the carrot cake to end all carrot cakes. And everyone would ask Sue LaBelle for her carrot cake recipe, and she would proudly share it. But nobody else's carrot cake was ever as good as Sue LaBelle's. And when she retired, she admitted, we all kind of knew, but she admitted, she always left out one key ingredient so that nobody else's carrot cake would be as good as hers. Well, when we make up the future, we're always leaving out one key ingredient, which is we don't know what we'll be thinking in the moment. We don't know what insights will come to us in the moment. We don't know if in the moment we'll find this weird burst of courage or this weird burst of fear or this weird burst of clarity or this weird burst of confusion. We don't know if we're going to get an insight that's going to make something that looks difficult really, really easy. And so we're trying to predict the future without the ingredient of thought in the moment. And yet, thought in the moment is the key ingredient in our experience. So I can only tell you, and I'm going to kind of bring it to a close because it's a radio show, right? But I can only tell you that if you were my client, I would say, hey, book the test for the next available date. You'll either pass it or you won't. You'll either enjoy the experience or you'll hate it. You'll either feel like you're going to throw up or actually throw up. And then we've got a fresh start after that. But I guarantee you it won't be the same as it looks now.
Yeah, that's my fear. It's not an option to fail.
Yeah, but see, the nice thing, Madeline, is you're so wrong. It's always an option to fail.
It's a what, Dale?
It's always an option to fail.
I know, but I don't like it.
Well, you don't have to. So look, here's the deal, though, okay? If you take the test in 2 weeks or whenever, you know, however soon you can, whether pass or fail, phone me back, let us know, and I'll give you a coaching session, a proper coaching session off air, a $1,500 hour, just for taking the test.
That's awesome. Now, are you putting the deadline or am I?
Let's say, let's give you a month. So by tax day, that way we can both remember it.
Okay.
All right. Deal.
Oh, deal. Oh my God. Thank you so much.
An absolute pleasure. I look forward to hearing back.
Now, if I pass, can I still have that?
Absolutely. Awesome. No. The offer's real. The offer's real. Pass or fail. You just got to take it.
Oh, thank you. So, by the way, what book can I get right now to start off with, one of your books? Because this is the first time I really get a chance to listen to you.
You know, I'd grab The Inside Out Revolution. I think they're both great. But I think for a lot of people who are newer to this, The Inside Out Revolution is the one that really helps them. And then I'd grab the free video program when it comes out this weekend, Do Nothing, Change Everything as well.
I will do. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
A real pleasure. Take care.
Thank you.
Look, why would I do that to the poor woman? Well, because I get it, right? We get in our head and it all looks real and it all looks really serious. And we're all suffering from the same thing when we suffer. Thought that looks real. Unrecognized thought. And fortunately, unrecognized thought is still thought, which means it's still temporary, which means it's still transient, which means like clouds in the sky, even though it really looks, if you're up in an airplane, like you could lie down and have the most beautiful sleep on the clouds, actually, if you tried to, you'd fall right through them because they look solid, but they're not. And thought is exactly the same. Let's go from, we started in Seattle, we went to Chicago, let's go to New York and speak to Carlos. Carlos, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hello, Michael, it's Carlos, and I want to talk about what do you do or what do you advise for somebody who is being reading your books and feeling that it's getting somewhere and then listening to the three principles and understanding it. And then I've been reading lately for a second time The Power of Now. And all of them, they kind of combine in that sense of being you know, neutralize your mind, your thoughts, get connected to your body, or, you know, just be on the present moment. But sometimes you just fall to the cracks, and you have a terrible, you wake up at 4 o'clock at night, and suddenly you are assaulted by all the thoughts and all the questions and the things you didn't do, and you worthless being, and all those other conversation, and you are unable to get out of that role play. So, and then so often you talk about the gentleness of the system, you know, the kindness of the system. How can we connect with that kindness? Do you have a shortcut?
Well, I don't know if it's going to come across as a shortcut, but let me share what I see. So I had a woman come up to me after a talk I gave in London, and she was quite upset with me because I had used the metaphor for the three principles of mind, consciousness, and thought as being like the sun, the sky, and the clouds. That our consciousness is like the sky. We are the space within which life unfolds. And mind, this creative mind, this spark of life, the source is the sun. It's the energy source. And thoughts are like clouds. They come and they go, and they take different shapes, and they create weather, and they're part of a larger unfolding. They're not random clouds, but they're somewhat unpredictable, even with the best meteorological techniques, as to exactly what form they'll take and exactly where they'll go. And she said to me, she said, well, you know, that's all pretty and stuff, but what do you do if you get caught in a thunderstorm? And I said, well, I get wet, but the kindness of the design is I know no matter how wet I get, at some point I'll dry out because my natural state is dry. And that makes me not fear getting wet so much. And that means that I get to live with more grace when it's really enjoying the weather when it's sunny, without being scared of the weather when it's stormy. So in a way, I guess if I was going to answer the question, a shortcut to finding the kindness, it's seeing that there is already a fully functioning ecosystem. The sun is always there, even when I'm not feeling it. And no matter how wet I get, I'll always be dry again in the morning. So for me, when I have a 4 a.m. moment, which happens from time to time, I get caught up. I don't enjoy it. I question myself. I think, oh, who are you to talk to people about this stuff? You know, you still get upset. Who are you to? And then at some point, that usually turns into compassion because I recognize, oh, wait, I never said that understanding weather means that you're not subject to it. In the same way as understanding gravity doesn't mean you don't fall down if you trip. It just means you don't have to make more of it than's there. You don't have to think it's a permanent affliction or that it's a personal failing. And because you can see it for what it is, you don't really have to worry about something that's going to come and go on its own. Now, what do you hear in that, Carlos?
I was hoping for something more wonderful.
I appreciate your honesty.
Fuck shit. That's terrible. So we have to just put up with whatever those bad days and those, that's you have to master.
Well,
that up.
Yeah, you know, I would actually say that that's true. But the funny thing is, and this is my experience, that when you stop thinking that you're supposed to be able to control it, the bad days don't seem to come so often, and they aren't so bad when they come.
What about you? Do you try to connect to your body when you are in that place. You try to regard your breathing, or you just go into the movie and you play the role, and then you realize, oh, I'm in the movie, I just shoot back up. Or how do you do it?
It just depends. If I have enough presence of mind, right, and I love that expression, presence of mind.
Yes.
If I am present enough to mind to see what's going on, then yeah, I usually kind of try and sit out the movie. But if I don't. And what I don't do is fall for the permanence. That's probably the biggest thing that I've seen. Like I've told this story once or twice on air, but I had a friend and her husband had a heart attack. And they were in their early 50s, so it was, you know, before you'd think. And he was a healthy looking guy. And she was totally freaked out, and she asked me if I would come and talk to her. And I said, absolutely, I'll come tomorrow, because I wasn't able to come that day. And between my agreeing to come and talk to her and our actual lunch appointment, I had a bunch of stuff go wrong, and I had one of those crappy nights, one of those 4 in the morning nights. And I was going to cancel because I just thought, I hate the world right now and feel like a worthless piece of crap. I can't help this woman. I'm not going to go. But I had enough presence of mind. I was present enough to mind that I kind of knew to go anyways. And we had lunch, and she told me about everything that was wrong in her life and all her fears. And then I told her about everything that was wrong in my life and all my fears, until we were both kind of talked out. And then in the quiet, something new occurred to me. And I said to her, you know, the only difference between you and me right now is that you think that the world's still going to look like this tomorrow. And I know the world's not going to look like this tomorrow, because I know my thoughts will have changed. And it was interesting. She wrote back to me that night and thanked me because her thoughts had changed, and it didn't look so hopeless the next night.
Another question. So when you feel like that, you don't feel that is a dirty secret that you don't want to tell, or you don't want to keep it
live? Oh, no, God, Carlos,
I go on
air and tell it, right? I mean, I lead with it, because it takes all the pressure off me to pretend I've got all my shit together.
Yeah.
Right? I have no interest in pretending that I'm not human and that my poop doesn't smell. Like, it's, you know, that's I don't want to have to live up to that.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your honesty. I was expecting you give me a fantastic sword and a shield that is magic.
Well, you know what's funny, Carlos, is when you realize that the enemy isn't real, you don't need a fantastic sword or a fantastic shield.
That's true. Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you, my
friend. I love your program.
I appreciate it.
Bye.
I do. I think that was beautiful. That was Teresa in Italy. I'm sorry, I'm not gonna try and squeeze you in the last minute, but thank you, and please phone back next show, and I will jump you to the front of the queue. The rest of you trying to get in, we will get to you next time. I love what Carlos said there, but I also kind of love what I just said there, is when you realize that the enemy isn't real, you don't need better weapons to fight him with. And when you realize that all we're ever up against is the feeling of thought in the moment, and thought by its very nature is temporary and transient, then it's just easier to let it pass through than it is to try and fight it and get stuck in the La Brea tar pits of your own psychology. So I hope you have enjoyed today's show. I hope you have taken rule number 6 to heart, and just maybe not taking yourself quite so seriously, even as you take what you're up to and what you're trying to accomplish as seriously as it merits and as it needs. And do check out michaelneal.org. So there's the small group coaching, michaelneal.org/infinite. There's the writer's workshop coming up. And above all, please look out for, both at my website and at Hay House's website, Do Nothing, Change Everything, a new video program that's absolutely free, and we'll be coming out this weekend. Have fun, learn heaps. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.